Good morning and welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the conversation, call or text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. We are really excited to have our next guest join us because I think it's something we can all learn from and use in our daily lives. We want to have civil conversations with people, and how do we talk to people with whom we do not agree? So Dr. Karen Tamirius is our guest. She's a political psychiatrist and the founder of Smart Politics with a BA in political science from UC Berkeley and an MD from UC San Francisco. Dr. Tamirius, thank you so much for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me.
It's something that we talk about at Civic Media a lot, and trying to have civil discourse with people, but I'm assuming there are some rules as far as what to do and what not to do. So let's start with what we should not do when we're talking to someone who's on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, I think of this as kind of the first do no harm principle. And basically what it comes down to is don't make the person you're talking with defensive. It's most people want to engage in a productive way, but the conversation breaks down when they start to feel that they are being attacked.
Sure.
in some way.
So saying you're completely wrong, why are you such an idiot, is probably not a good way to begin that conversation.
That is a textbook case.
Thank you, Doctor. Noted. I'll note that.
Okay,
thank you
we're
very
done.
Much.
That's all we need.
Well, I'm not going to Thanksgiving this year. Cool.
So how do we go about it then? What is the approach? Don't attack. They're not the enemy, right?
Right.
So
right.
Where do we take it? Then what's the next step? What should we do?
Well, I think where you need to start is really understanding what makes people defensive, why defensiveness happens. What I talk about is the persuasion paradox, which is when people sense that we are trying to control them in some way, make them believe or behave in a way that is contrary to their will, then they naturally feel threatened. And so anything we do that makes them feel that way is problematic. So the things I point to are threatening them in some way, shaming them in some way, trying to make them feel bad about themselves, ostracizing them, telling them that you're not going to spend time with them if they continue to hold these beliefs. And then even debating is problematic, which has taken me personally a long time to really grasp, because I was trained as a debater. I was a high school debate champion, married to a lawyer. Like, we are very connected to debate.
Right.
But debate outside of the context of a debate round or a trial actually is really threatening to people, because our beliefs about the world make us feel secure and centered. And so you can't shift those just through a head-on attack. Instead, what we need to do is really focus, before we even talk about the issues that divide us, on building a relationship that is safe enough and strong enough to contain the conversation.
So it's establishing a trusting relationship, essentially, right? So they can,
yeah,
we can all share what we think, and we're not going to get jumped on for sharing what I think.
Exactly. I say the absolute first thing you need to establish in a conversation is safety, comfort. The person needs to feel that they can open up to you and be honest with you without you attacking them or turning on them, withholding your affection, withholding belonging, whatever that may be. And that's a really hard thing to do. In our culture, we aren't that tolerant of alternative views.
Right. If you're just joining us, Dr. Karen Tamirius is here. She is the founder of Smart Politics and also a political psychiatrist. And we're just talking about how to talk to people that we don't agree with.
I think one of the, you know, you speak about your history in the world of debate and what your husband does. I think one of the things we as a society also need to do is really be honest about that word, because we're not debating each other. They don't even debate each other in presidential politics.
Yeah.
It's yelling over each other to pre-constructed questions that are agreed upon by the other people. And we're not actually having an exchange of ideas. We're just a lot of times yelling at each other. And I think that's one of the other things too, is we mistake the yelling and the bickering with, I'm debating. No, you're not. You're just yelling at each other. You're not learning anything. And you're walking away with nothing from one another, knowing when you walk into it, I'm not changing my mind. Well, I'm not changing my mind either. Well, what a waste of 20 minutes.
Right. One of the things, exercises I kind of have people do in order to help them think about this is to imagine in a courtroom situation, if the standard for persuasion were for the prosecutor to actually persuade the defendant that they were guilty. A lot of times that's what we're trying to do in a conversation. One of the things that makes debate work in a courtroom, what makes it work in a debate tournament or even in a legislature, is that you're supposed to have a commitment to being unbiased in those situations, right? The jury is supposed to be unbiased.
Right.
The judge is supposed to be unbiased. You and I, if we're having a political conversation, aren't unbiased.
No.
And right, we are coming from a place where we have already formed really strong opinions. And it's not as simple as you know, we are not going to come to the table with an unbiased view of the evidence and the arguments. And so the focus, if you want to persuade someone, has to be on creating a space where change is actually easier. And that's a trick. That takes work.
I was going to say that sounds like a really difficult thing to do. So we've established this relationship. We've established that you can tell the truth. It's a safe space and you're not going to be attacked. So what is the step after that?
Yeah, well, one thing that I find really helpful to think about is the way the mind kind of works. And there's this great metaphor that was developed by Jonathan Haidt, who wrote the book, The Righteous Mind. And it's about, you can think of the mind as divided between a rider on an elephant. So one part of the mind is the rider. That's the conscious reasoning part of the brain. And the other part is the elephant, which is more the intuitive, emotional, gut level part of the mind. And in our conversations, what we usually try to do is talk with the rider. But here's the catch. The rider is very rational and logical, but the rider doesn't have the power. The elephant does. If the elephant doesn't want to go somewhere, the rider can't force it. And most of the time, the rider is in the position of trying to justify the elephant refusing to go somewhere. So rather than reasoning, it engages in rationalization. So if you want to get the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
And the elephant is the emotion. The elephant is the gut.
The emotion and the intuition. Yeah.
Therefore, you must approach it with, I don't want to say caution like an elephant, as you should approach an elephant with caution, but you have to approach it with your own open mind. Because what I'm hearing from you, and I like it because it puts responsibility, like I could walk into a debate or a discussion or argument with someone and say, I have all the answers. I'm right. You're wrong. But what I'm not doing is taking the work on myself to say, how do I present that information? How do I present that knowledge? And how do I be open to that person having a different opinion? And also just maybe rejecting what I'm saying. You have to you have to do as much work as you expect them to do for you when listening and having this discussion.
Absolutely. If you want to have a successful conversation, and more importantly, be persuasive in that conversation, you need to carry a lot of the responsibility yourself. First of all, you have to remain emotionally centered yourself, not get triggered.
Yeah.
You have to make them feel safe. And then you have to focus on talking with them at an emotional level, connecting with their elephant before you even start talking with the rider.
Dr. Karen Tamarius is our guest. She's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree. Tom from LA is on the line. Good morning, Tom. What did you want to say? Tom?
From a different... Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I said one of the areas where I've been able to find agreement with people from the across the political aisle or whatever it might be is, you know, I've said, look, you and I agree about nothing. And I actually bring their defenses down because they can be comfortable in their own skin about what it is that they actually stand for. But I say, can we at least agree that money and politics and legal bribery and that politicians should not be bought. Can we at least agree on that fact? And they'll say, yeah, I do agree. I think it's ridiculous, that there's so much money in politics. And that's somewhere where we can find that common ground. And then from there, you know, we can move into other things. But I think if you actually talk policy rather than talk personality, message rather than messenger, you're going to get a lot further in terms of your persuasiveness, or not even persuasiveness, because it's not a game, it's actually reality. But being able to show them, hey, we do have some common agreement here.
That's great perspective, Tom. Really appreciate that. Thank you. We are going to keep the discussion going with Dr. Karen Tamarius. If you have a question or a comment, 855-752-4842. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Join the conversation. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform Elon continues to ruin. We are joined by our guest, political psychiatrist and the founder of Smart Politics. Dr. Karen Tamarius is here, and we're talking about how to talk to people that we don't agree with in a civil way that's actually going to accomplish something, which I think is something we can all agree on.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Tamarius, I had to, when Jane said you were going to be on the show, and the title was political psychiatrist, I was like, hold on. Is that an actual like profession? I've never heard of that before. Or is it something where you like, I'm a psychiatrist, I want to work in the political realm. Can you just give an idea to me, what political psychiatry is?
Yeah, there aren't many of us. I'll put that out there first. And it's not usually something you set out to do. I certainly didn't. I originally set out to be a political scientist, mm-hmm, with an emphasis in political psychology. And then somewhere along the way, I decided actually I was really interested in how the brain worked, and in psychological disorders as well. So I decided to go to medical school and became a psychiatrist. Yeah. And then the 2016 election happened. And that was when I realized, oh, my two worlds are uniting here. and I actually have something to offer.
The peanut butter's in the chocolate and vice versa. I can't go back.
Exactly.
Carmela from Milwaukee has been very patient. Thank you for waiting, Carmela. Did you have a question for Dr. Tamarius?
Yes. I do. I got a lot out of what you said, but my reaction usually, I tend to be on the passive end of it because I'm usually getting other people, and they make me defensive, and they're spouting off misinformation, and I don't have enough time to, like, Google and prove them wrong. I know they're not, I don't want to say wrong, but I know that there's other information that could correct that or inform them. But I'm usually on the passive side of it because then I'm like, well, he's just vile. And then I walk away because I don't know how else to, especially with someone I love, deal with that situation because usually they're coming at me, you know,
right.
with this. How do I deal with that?
Yeah, that is a great question. So I hear you actually talking about two things. One is that feeling of being kind of emotionally overwhelmed. But the second thing is feeling like you don't have enough information. And that's kind of like feeling like I need some ammunition to bring to this political dialogue. So the first thing I would say is let's address the emotional overwhelm or triggering that happens when you enter a political conversation. The best way to deal with that I found is through what is essentially exposure therapy. It's having yourself spend time being exposed to things that are really triggering for you and actively working on calming yourself down emotionally. The more you practice that, the less triggering it will be. I personally had to do that myself after the 2016 election to get to a place where I could do this work. So it does work, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It takes dedicated commitment. So then there's the second thing you raise, which is this feeling that you don't know enough to really engage persuasively. And that's the beauty kind of my method, which is when you're talking to the elephant, it doesn't matter how much you know. What is really persuasive to other people is that relationship. So what I encourage you to focus on is asking curious questions that help you understand where they're coming from. Reflecting back what they say. So if they're making an argument that you disagree with, that's fine. But at least try to restate their argument in your own words to show them that you're hearing them out.
Right.
And then maybe find one or two things you can agree with. As an earlier caller said, a lot of times it seems like there's nothing that they're saying that we can agree with. But the reality is we can usually agree on things like emotions and goals and values. I personally try to stay away from talking about politicians and policies and facts. But goals, values, and emotions, you can almost always find common ground on.
So it's almost, if you're having this discussion, Dr. Tamirius, it's like, this scares me, and here's why this particular politician or policy or whatever, this scares me, and here is why this scares me. Is that a good way to bring it up?
I would actually just stop with, you know, I'm scared by this too. Yeah. This is a really fraught issue for me, or, you know, I'm really passionate about this also. That's the connection.
And set up that commonality between the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Carmela, if you're still listening, I hope you're still listening. We love it. Dr. Carmela is one of our regular listeners, calls, texts. We love her very much. Something that she said last week to Pat during his show on Up North News Radio was, instead of worrying about having every single piece of political fact in your head, every single policy, everything, you know, all the big information, connect with them about how it makes you feel. Because at the end of the day, it makes you feel a certain way. And if they love you, they're at the very least going to listen to you. I can't say you're going to change their mind or make them change their vote. But, you know, if you're talking to a family member and you say, this is why this piece of policy makes me afraid, You know, you can, I think Carmela, you had the word, you had the advice all the whole time, but like what the doctor is saying is even better to expound upon. It's about just having that good talk.
Well, and like Dr. Tamiri said too, you can have a whole fact sheet of facts and policies, and that's not what's going to cut through. No. It's how people feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, yeah. that establishes.
You don't change minds with facts. As much, you know, as much as we'd like to believe that that's the way it works, yeah. it doesn't. Unless someone hasn't made a decision yet. If they don't have an opinion, facts and reason are pretty powerful.
But if they've already established their position on this, facts aren't going to be the thing that changes it.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
We are going to keep this conversation going. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen Tamiria. She's going to stay with us for another segment. Right after the news, we will come back. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Karen Tamirius, you can call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. News is next. Stay here. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show. Call or text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder to download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. It's absolutely free, and that way you can listen to all of the shows across all of our stations around the state of Wisconsin. You can call and text in directly from the app as well. So do that and tell someone else to do that.
Do it.
We're very excited. She is gracious enough to spend another segment with us. Dr. Karen Tamirius is here. She's a political psychiatrist and the founder of Smart Politics. And we've been talking about how to talk to people that we don't agree with. Dr. Tamirius, just to do a little recap, first of all, don't scare them. Don't put people on defense right away, right?
Right.
Establish trust.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then don't talk to the rider. You want to talk to the elephant in your brain. And the elephant in your brain is the one that controls the emotions. The rider is the more logical one, but it's the elephant you have to convince.
Initially. So here's the thing. Once you have the elephant on your side, then you can start talking to the rider. But it's tricky. The tricky part is you can't talk to the rider in a way that spooks the elephant.
Okay.
Right? So you've made great friends with the elephant. The elephant trusts you, wants to follow you. Now you want to communicate with the rider. So how do you do that more effectively? It's usually not effective to go back into debate mode, presenting facts and evidence. But what you can do is share stories, particularly personal stories or stories of individuals that are really powerful. And those can shift the narrative a little bit. So, for example, if someone is denying the existence of climate change, rather than presenting them with a bunch of evidence about the existence of climate change, talk about how you have personally been impacted by changes in the weather, or someone close to you has been impacted. What's amazing about personal stories, what makes them great, is first of all, they're subjective. So the other person can't really argue with you.
Because it was your experience, right?
It was your experience, right? The second thing, it really kind of sneaks by what we call the belief defense system. People don't feel like that's taking on their beliefs of the world. They hear a story and they internalize it just like they would any other story. But those facts become lodged in their memory in a way that facts presented in other ways don't. So, they also help with empathy, which is really important.
Oh, I can absolutely see that. You want to feel for each other, yeah. Right? That's another connection. That's another connector.
We get a text, and I think this is more of a clarification here. Mary from Mount Horeb asked previous when there was a statement made that facts don't matter. Mary says, if facts don't matter, what are we debating or discussing? My husband and I are polar opposites politically and agreed that we cannot talk about politics. I'm sorry, but facts matter to me. Emotions connect only to a certain point. I feel like there's a miscommunication on the concept of facts not mattering.
Right. Facts obviously matter. Facts are important. But when it comes to being persuasive with someone, when it comes to getting the conversation on solid ground where progress can be made, it doesn't start with facts. In fact, facts tend to follow emotion. So if you are connecting at a deep emotional level, if the other person feels like they're really being heard, then you can potentially get to a place where you can start to investigate why your facts don't line up. The important thing, though, is when you do start to talk about facts is not to get into a debate about my facts versus your facts. Rather, it should be a cooperative exploration. So ideally, you want to form an alliance with the person who has different facts from you and say, hey, it looks like we have different facts. That's kind of interesting. Why don't we explore together this topic and see if we can figure out why we have these different views, and if together we can come up with a more realistic view of reality.
So this is a long process.
Wait.
So it's what? Fascinating that you say that, because it can be a long process. It depends how much you're trying to accomplish, but it's amazing how much can be accomplished in a very short period sometimes. One of my favorite things is to get on an airplane and take a flight a couple hours, you know, maybe from the Bay Area up to Washington, and get seated next to someone who really disagrees with me and have a conversation and kind of see how much I can move them over the course of the conversation. And one of my favorite things about that is often we end the conversation with them saying something like, you know, I never knew somebody from Berkeley could be so reasonable and that we would agree on so many things. And can I have your card? And, you know, can we follow up together and connect? Like, it really can be done in a very short period of time.
Wow. When I get on a plane, I don't want anyone even look at me, let alone talk to me. But that's amazing. I mean, that's great. I feel like it takes a special kind of person, i.e. you, to get on a plane to say, I want to have a conversation with somebody. I want to not, when I say provoke, I don't mean like in a mean way, but like, I want to make this happen.
I want to engage.
I want to purposely have a discussion with a complete stranger and see where it goes. That is amazing. Doctor, I want to employ a little bit maybe of more of the psychiatrist side of you than the political side of you. One thing I notice is I see a lot of friends and family on social media, and they're more than willing to scream at politicians, celebrities, or just people they see that they disagree with. They can write snarky comics, lean in there, and they're like, ha, I really got so-and-so.
Yeah, I beat you.
But they're not having those, they're not even trying to have those same discussions, and sometimes they're not discussions, with their friends and loved ones who they disagree with, who they consistently say, like, it's my uncle, or it's my mom, or it's my sister, and I just can't deal with that right now. But they're willing to go on social media and basically take all of that energy out on a stranger. Can you speak to the psychological impact of doom scrolling and having to be part of these fake conversations on social media that don't really go anywhere?
Yeah, I find that to be a really fascinating phenomenon too. And one of the things I've learned is you need to separate out the kind of political engagement people do to achieve their political goals, mm-hmm. and the kind of engagement they do for some kind of psychological gratification. And a lot of times what you see happening on social media is people making snarky comments, not because they think anyone's mind is going to be changed, but because it makes them feel good. Yeah. It is an emotional outlet to feel like I showed them, or I
got one up on you. Down. Yeah.
Right. And there's actually a lot of research that looks at how that kind of engagement achieves a certain kind of social status. Mm-hmm. It's not even just that people are getting emotional gratification, but they get laudits from people who feel like them.
Yeah.
But those engagements are actually harmful in terms of achieving our political goals. If you go back to, what I consider to be the first secret of political persuasion, first do no harm. Those kinds of activities do harm.
Yeah. Well, I think also too, the frustration you may be feeling with your family or friends who disagree with you politically, that's not being mended. Those stressors and triggers still are there in your everyday life. And you're never going to solve anything by doing it on social media. And also, and this is coming from someone who did it, I left a few snarky comments on Instagram on accounts I don't like. I end up getting more of those videos sent to me. And I'm on parts of these social media websites that I don't want to be on. And it's because I did it, because I decided I wanted to be the king of all media. And I decided then all of a sudden, oh, great. It's like 50 videos about pastors on the street corners telling people about how, you're wrong for not believing. It's like, I didn't want this. I did this to myself.
Well, it's just interesting to me what we will do for that hit of dopamine. Yeah. Right? Because that's what it is.
Exactly. It does take a reorientation in the way you engage. One thing that people often say to me when they first hear about my work is, well, that's fine and good in person, but you could never do that on social media. And the reality is the work I do in person is the exact same as the work I do on social media. I have lots of productive conversations with people I disagree with on social media. And I think that's one of the, if people understood more that if they change the way they engage, they could actually achieve their political goals. That might cause more of a shift.
I have to imagine also your never-ending patience and wanting to find those truths and connect have to frustrate the living heck out of some people. They're like, they'll say something and you're like, I've never thought of it that way. They're like, no, that's not what I wanted.
Fight with me.
There are a few people who kind of disappear, just poof, right?
Yep.
Because I actually turn around and say, oh, tell me more. But mostly what I get is people being confused at first. Occasionally they're a little suspicious of my mm-hmm. motives.
Sure.
Like, what is this? Is this some kind of trick? But once they realize I'm actually sincere, they genuinely appreciate the opportunity to share their views and are more than happy to engage.
Well, and I think too, for those people who are looking for that dopamine hit by, you know, getting one over on you, when you don't respond that way, you deprive them of that hit, right? Because you're not responding in the way they expected. They wanted you to get angry. They wanted you to come back at them. And now it's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
And then they go, because like, I'll go poke at someone on Twitter. It's fine.
Dr. Karen Demirius is a political psychiatrist and the founder of Smart Politics. And we have just been talking about how we can talk to people that we don't agree with. We all, not all, unfortunately, I think there are some who still love the, I'm just going to scream over my, you know, people who disagree with me. But I think the vast majority of us want to talk to each other.
I have the title of this segment for this podcast. I'm going to say it's going to be called Talk to the Inner Elephant First. Because I love that. That's great.
I like it.
That's great.
It's been a wonderful conversation, Dr. Demirius. I hope we can have you back in a couple of months and do a little recap. And Greg and I will work on ourselves and we'll let you know how that goes.
I don't need to work on anything. I'm fine. I'm right. You liberals!
Dr. Karen Demirius has been our guest. Thank you so very much, Dr. Demirius.
Thank you, doctor.
Stay close.
Thank you very much for having me.
One more segment to go. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at 855-75-CIVIC or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Brittany Merlot is here, Civic Media Meteorologist for Weather and Wine. Do we want to talk weather first or do we want to talk socks?
Just as a really quick aside, this is it's National Moscato Day.
It is.
I didn't know that.
We found that out this morning, and what better way to celebrate it than with Brittany Merlot?
Celebrate with all wines today if you can, right?
Let's start with weather.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. What do we got coming up in the next couple of days?
Well, what do we want to whine about exactly? The rain or the cooler temperatures?
Let's talk about the rain first, because in some instances, this is actually good because we have been concerned about drought.
Yes.
I would assume now are we finally caught up around most of the state?
Oh, across the state, we're actually looking pretty good compared to just a few months ago.
Good.
I mean, only 7% of the state is abnormally dry. And really, it's just Sauk County, Richland, Juneau, and I think Adams County has the severe status still. But
that's so interesting.
It is, because they're getting hit with rain right now.
Yeah.
From La Crosse to Madison and into Milwaukee. So, you know, it is not taking into consideration the past rain that we just got and today as well. So every drop is helping for the gardeners, for the growers as well. But tonight, did you hear there's a freeze watch up north?
How cold is it going to get up there?
They're going to drop down to the upper 20s.
Oh, yeah, my.
Freezing.
Oh, yeah. Man. Because that's terrible, because things have got to be budding. Trees have got to be budding out up there by now.
They sure are. We've got the flowers out. The grass is green. The trees are budding. And here we go to a cold overnight. Now, hopefully this will be one of the last ones. And I know a lot of people wait until at least after Mother's Day to plant. But we had some nice warm temperatures. People just got the itch, I think.
Yep. Well, and I'm seeing all the garden shops open, and pansies are always tend to be some of the first flowers that are out, and they must be a little bit tougher than the rest of them as far as flowers go. But That's, I mean, you're going to have to cover that stuff up. We're talking about Superior and Hayward and up there, Brittany, for these cold temps tonight.
Yes. Yes, we are. Even into Rhinelander is possible as well. So Northern Wisconsin, watch out, cover things up, bring them inside.
Is this a day long thing, or will this be like it can be a freeze over the morning and then temperatures will go up? Like, I don't want to say dramatically, but like by the afternoon, it's like closer to where we should be at in May.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So tomorrow we will see some temperatures warming up. Up north, you're going to get into the 60s. Actually, statewide, we'll all be into the 60s both tomorrow and Saturday. We don't get shoved warmer until Sunday, but hey, that's perfect timing for the mothers out there.
Yeah, definitely. If you're going to go, I don't know what you do on Mother's Day.
My mom hates going out. She doesn't like being amongst the crowds.
Too many people.
So we'll just hang out.
That's nice. But yeah, nice if you can sit out the backyard and go on the patio and whatever. So rain is coming to Milwaukee as well and southeastern Wisconsin, Brittany, today.
Yeah, so you still have the chances of some light scattered showers here throughout the afternoon. Those wind down by about 5 p.m. or so. Then the clouds will clear. We'll see some sunshine to start tomorrow, but clouds thicken again by the afternoon, and we're going to see some more showers, potentially some thunderstorms, and some of those could have some hail as we go through tomorrow night. That kicks them out of here by Saturday, though. And we'll see some more sunshine.
Good. Let's talk hail.
That's a segue, my friends.
Brittany Merlot is Civic Media meteorologist, and she joins us for Weather and Wine at 11:50. I'm sorry, I just crushed your joke. Say it again.
Oh, hail no.
Well, goodbye, folks. See ya.
Our day is done. Our show is complete. What is the Fojita scale for hail? Because there are different, right? There are different measurements, but it's not a number. It's a P, right? Is that where it starts?
Yes, it does start at a P. You're
okay,
exactly
okay.
Right.
All right.
So where do we, it's what, P, golf ball?
I'd say grape is next.
Does grape make it in there?
Grape is not one of the qualifying ones, but we go from P to mothball, to penny, to nickel, then we hit severe. If you're going to see quarter-size hail, you've got a severe worn storm. And it goes to ping pong ball, golf ball, hen egg, tennis ball, baseball, softball, and then a grapefruit.
I feel like the hen egg does not get a fair shot here. I have never heard any meteorologist ever say they had hail the size of a hen egg. It's never happened.
I agree with you. I don't think I've ever used it. We go straight from like ping pong and golf ball to
baseball.
Tennis.
Yeah, or baseball. Yeah. It's a baseball.
You heard it here, folks. Jay Matinere taking a stand. I think we should take the mothball out because mothballs, that's
very
antiquated.
Old. It's
Let's
very
put
old.
Cheese ball in there. Cheese ball. Yeah. Cheese ball size hail. Can you imagine if cheese balls fell from the sky?
That would be
amazing.
It would be like the snowflakes tongue out trying to catch the cheese ball.
Do we want to move on then?
We just got a couple of minutes left.
So really quick, during the show this morning with Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, you told a wonderful sock story involving a fan of your work. Can you please tell us that story again?
Yeah, so it must have been on this day exactly a couple years back. I was up on TV and we had the story about the socks and how to not lose that extra pair and what to do. And all of a sudden, a few days later, this man gets into the studio, has his hand behind his back, and he's like, I've got something for you, Brittany. I've got something. Yeah, I was a little scared at first. And he pulls out these little clips, like, the little pins.
Like diaper pins.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, this is how you don't lose socks in the wash. You pin them together.
Was that Tony?
We had a call this morning that said the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was from Northern Wisconsin. Is Tony from Northern Wisconsin?
I don't know, but it sounds like it would also wreak havoc on your washing and drying machines.
Yeah.
All that metal flying around. And
but what about, I mean, we have zippers on everything.
You know what, Jane? Sometimes I'm just trying to put forth a theory. I let your hen egg thing go. I support you.
Fine.
Geese in prisons from whatever. All right.
And we're going to follow up on that too.
Whatever.
Brittany Merlot joins us every Thursday at this time for a little weather and wine update. Stay warm. I know you're in Wausau. Everybody up north, stay warm. We will see you next week, Brittany. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, news is on the way next, followed by Todd Allbutt, noon to 2, and then Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4. Thank you, Calvin and Greg and our engineers for making everything work. Otherwise, this would be a complete failure. And thank you to you for listening and texting and for calling. It means everything. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it here on the Civic Media Radio Network.